welcome. Thank you for joining us. It is another episode of Sactown Talks, where we chat with Sacramento's movers, shakers, and eclectic personalities. This week, I'm pleased to bring to you a man who truly needs no introduction, Patrick Harbison.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really, really excited to be here. Big fan of the show. Listen regularly.
I'm glad to know that someone's listening out there, actually. my own mom won't listen.
Mom,
if you're out there, I'm just kidding.
Well, hopefully
I'm
she listens kidding. To this one.
No,
right?
Cause you know what it is I do two podcasts. So okay. Little cross-promotion here. I also do a podcast called Life in Jiu-Jitsu for martial arts enthusiasts. And she's like, honey, you're putting so much stuff out there, I just can't keep up. I was like, it's okay, Ma, get to it when you can.
She's got time, right?
Yeah.
She's got time.
So I'm going to be totally forthcoming with folks here. I was interested in having you on because you're kind of a social media influencer.
Oh, thank you.
And I was kind of hoping to piggyback off of that by having sure. you on, you know?
Well, I will post and tag and push it out through my networks, absolutely.
Awesome. But it's also kind of your, you've turned like a passion of connecting with people into a livelihood, right?
Yeah, wow. That's a really nice way of putting it. And that's what I set out to do. So I own here locally PHPR, which is a local public relations firm, and we specialize in a number of things, but our big bread and butter is earned media, which is television, radio, and print placement on behalf of our clients, who are wide-ranging. But yeah, it was sort of a conscious decision that I made about 6 years ago to kind of kick off PHPR and prioritize clients that I really wanted to work with, really prioritized working with, but that also had a deep appreciation and fondness for Sacramento like I did.
Okay. So you were doing pretty well for yourself.
I was.
Before you sort of took the dive.
Yeah.
And so you were the communications director, is that right?
That's right.
Municipal Utilities Association.
Right.
And just quickly for folks who are listening, like SMUD would be a municipal utility, right?
Right, absolutely. So there's pay utilities, right?
Which would be like investor-owned
utilities. And then there's your publicly owned utilities, which we have one of the most progressive publicly owned utilities in the entire country here, being SMUD.
Yeah.
But yeah, so basically they're the statewide association that would lobby on behalf of those utility interests.
Right.
Throughout the state.
Just quickly here, this I kind of am a fan of the wonky sort of stuff.
Okay.
That's
good.
Like some pretty in the weeds, more efficient energy through community aggregation, right?
Totally.
What were some of the, and let me sort of use that as a springboard, so just asking a little bit more about you. How do you message something like that kind of complex, right?
Yeah, it was
and
hard.
And keep it fun.
It was hard, right, because, you know, it's not on paper the sexiest topic. And when you talk about publicly owned utilities, a lot of times you're talking about not only energy, but also water. And both those sectors, as you know, have completely different issues and struggles. And so, some of the stuff that we were talking about was 20% renewable energy resources by the year 2020 that was mandated by the governor, Jerry Brown. And on the water side, you know, we're talking about water reuse and wastewater and how that might affect, you know, customer bottom lines, right? What these mandates trickle down to in terms of a cost effect. And so while a number of the issues are cyclical, kind of year to year, you know what you're going to get in terms of, you know, you've got a liberal legislature and you can kind of tell where they're going to go. The messaging sort of repeats itself. There might be some nuance depending on who's in office.
Right.
But by and large, it was sort of the same. And, you know, prior to working for the utilities, I did the same thing at the Faculty Association. And then prior to that, it was at the Medical Association. And so anytime you're kind of working for a politically minded trade association, the issues do tend to be cyclical. I think, though, the learning curve that I had.
Well, that's a really interesting insight. I had not thought of it like that from an association standpoint, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're politically engaged, obviously, because you have to be, and you're sponsoring a lot of bills at times. But, you know, each trade is particularly concerned with the same issues year in and year out.
Got it.
But for me, the big learning curve was obviously just energy and water, because I had no background in those issues prior to coming to CMUA at the time. And so that was a challenge that I really appreciated when I got there.
Yeah,
because I love the learning curve.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick your brain on that quickly, because you know, my previous life as a legislative staffer,
right.
I always felt like there was this sort of like this disconnect between like the policy wonks and sort of like the press folks who can sort of like distill it into a actionable message, right? And sort of like never the twain shall meet, right? actually, remember an old coworker of mine was a he was a journalist first, and then he came into the building.
Okay.
And he was like, oh man, like it's actually a lot more complicated than I could have ever imagined on the outside. You
Absolutely.
Know? So you're doing well for yourself, but you decided to take the leap and
I did.
Open up shop for yourself.
I did. You know, I.
Oh, can I ask you to just maybe just give it a little bit more speech? Sure. You have such a strong voice.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's perfect.
It's the baritone.
You sound great. You sound good.
Yeah, I decided to take the leap, you know, kind of to that point of these issues being cyclical. You know, at the time that I had decided to make the leap, it had been 10 years in house, just over a decade for various statewide associations. And I thought, gosh, you know, I've spent all this time developing these relationships with media outlets here locally, statewide, some even nationally. And I was getting, to be quite honest with you, a little bored.
Yeah.
With the political scene.
Because it is cyclical and you kind of know what's coming and then you're on cruise control.
And I love Sacramento so much. I mean, I'm from here and I still live here, you know, and I've got family here. And I thought I just felt like Sacramento was at a cusp.
Yeah.
It was at a turning point where you started to see a lot of people that were from here owning their own businesses, starting bars, starting restaurants, kind of leading this charge of SAC 2.0. You know, I was really excited about the arena and all the new infrastructure that came along with it. But anyway, I just thought the time was right. I thought the time was right. And I took a gamble and it was really scary.
Tell me about that. So you're, and you know, you don't have, we can cut this out actually if you want, but I'm presuming there's some overlap where you kind of, you got your day job, you got the checks coming in, right?
Right.
We also got to quietly put out feelers out there like, hey, totally. I'm thinking about jumping ship. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Don't tell anybody, but I'm thinking about jumping ship. Are you with me? You know, like,
well, it's
can
sort
I bring
of
you
dance.
On as a client, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And then also looking for a space, building out your website, like get that whole like launching, you know, of, you know, because you came out with a bang, right?
I did. Yeah. I mean, so it was.
Can you walk us through that process?
Sure. I mean, I was sort of strategic in that I tried to poach or pitch clients. Before I had left CMUA, I tried to pitch clients that had nothing to do with politics so that there wouldn't be a conflict. You know,
Got
there
it.
Wouldn't be a PAC conflict or a, you know, a legislative conflict or anything like that. And I was able to secure two that at the time would have paid me barely enough to survive should everything CMUA go away.
Right.
And, you know, the thought was that maybe I'd pitch, you know, my then employer to retain me part-time or to, you know, retain me as some sort of contract employee, but you know, their needs are really full time. I mean, they really need that position to be full time. So when push came to shove, I just left and went with the two clients I had, which was,
can you share who they were?
Yeah. I can't. Well, they were two Days of Our Lives soap opera actors.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know. It's it's so silly, but I sent a portfolio of my press clippings at that point, which were all politically based, to a number of publicists in Los Angeles that I identified through IMDb. And these were guys that were repping, I mean, I'm talking D list, D minus list, right?
Like Pauly Shore,
oh,
type of,
lower
not
than
even.
That. And okay. A bulk of them, sad to say, because I love these people, are daytime soap opera actors. Just because I thought if I was going to get a bite, it would be from.
You got to start somewhere.
You got to start somewhere, yeah. Right? And, you know, I had sent out, I think, 12 portfolios of my press clippings to various publicists and one bit. And agreed to have me be the lead on two of his then clients who were Days of Our Lives actors. And specifically what they wanted to do was run a daytime Emmy campaign. And it was,
oh, cool.
It was kind of right up my alley because it was sort of like political campaign work. I mean, you identify the voter base, you do direct marketing to them.
Right.
You
and
come
you
up
lobby.
With your messages. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then you go lobby. And one of them ended up winning the Emmy that year. And so it sort of took off from there.
Good for you.
But here I am back in Sacramento, right, doing all this work remotely. And, you know, $75,000 pay cut.
Oh, man.
When I left. And so it was really scary. It was really scary. And you sort of feel like you're falling without a net. But there is some freedom in that, though, because with all of that free time, you can go solicit and attract new clients. And you know, I certainly had some irons in the fire, and there was no doubt about that.
So you take a $75,000 pay cut with two daytime Emmy actors, daytime soap actors,
daytime.
Right?
And
how did you start lobbying folks in town? How's that work?
Well, you know, I really leveraged my interpersonal connections, you know.
Got it.
You know, living here my whole life and then obviously working in and around politics for that decade, you really get to meet a lot of people. And through that, business opportunities sort of arise. You know, I knew that one of the things that I really wanted to prioritize was nonprofit work. So I engaged myself with a number of local boards to meet people that way. I say that I shook every single hand I could for those for that first year and bought everybody a vodka soda, even when I couldn't afford it, just because.
On the credit card.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
No, that goodwill goes a long way.
It does.
Right?
Goodwill really does go a long way. And, you know, by the end of PHPR's first year, we were up to about 7 clients. And halfway through our year 2, I had recouped the salary that I had lost. And so, you know, I was really fortunate in that it was a risk that paid off.
Yeah. Insofar as going out on your own, what were the challenges that you kind of expected? It sounds like you maybe talked about that. What was the unexpected difficulties that sort of reared their heads where you're like, oh man, I wasn't ready for that?
Yeah.
Or was it smooth sailing?
It wasn't smooth sailing. I mean, the actual work I was really confident in. I mean, I knew how to message. I was confident again in my media contacts. So I knew I could guarantee the coverage placement that I was offering my clients. But, you know, what I had no idea how to do was run a business. I had no idea.
A little bit of everything, a little accounting, a little this, a little that. Yeah.
Tax IDs and budgeting and writing off things. And, you know, certainly as the business grew and we took on some employees and some contractors.
Now you're a manager too.
Right.
Now you're the human resources
sort of learning
department.
Those types of issues. And just for your own personal sake, planning your own health insurance and planning your own retirement and planning, you know, things that you just sort of take for granted when your employer handles it. I mean, that was a huge learning curve for me just because I'd never been in that situation before. And two, time management. I had a really hard time sort of managing my time with regards to personal, professional life, you know, and that was sort of draining because, you know, when it's just you, it's your own hustle.
Right. And in that, in terms of time management and balancing your workload with your social calendar, there's a go-between. There's a bleed there, right?
Oh,
like
absolutely.
If you go into the bunker and just do your work, then your contacts start going stale.
You're not shaking hands.
You're not buying vodka sodas. Yeah.
Right.
So you're just grinding 24/7.
And, you know, I really do look at, one of the things that I learned about myself at a young age was that I'm really social and I love being out. I love meeting new people. And so that was one of the things I thought that really kind of complemented owning my own business was that I was going to be at these events anyway, because I like to be at them, you know, and particularly if it's a good cause or a fun crowd, I mean, gosh, sign me up. So now that I can kind of use these events to further the agency visibility, it's a win-win.
That's awesome. Do you have any advice for any young professionals looking to go out on their own in whatever their discipline is, or even as far as PR?
Yeah, you know, I do. I speak a lot of times to colleges, you know, graduating classes, people that have really studied PR and are really excited to get out into the world. I think that you can't ever underestimate big agency or, again, big statewide association experience. I mean, I do think that there's a learning curve. I think that a lot of times people are really, you know, and this is one of the things I love the most about millennials, but they're so driven to kind of do everything right out of the gate. I think that there is truly something to be said for really honing your craft and getting that experience first. But the other thing that I would always tell people is to really know your lane. I mean, I've sort of devised PHPR to be hyper local. You know, we've got a couple statewide.
You know, you remind me of, I had Andy Young on.
Oh, I love Andy.
And he, yeah.
Andy, I work with Andy.
Andy's the man.
A couple clients.
Dude, yeah, he did this logo. It's my favorite
so
logo.
Good.
I was over at a mutual friend's wedding, actually my brother-in-law's wedding. And so we saw him there. I'd love to catch up with the guy. But, you know, he said something interesting where, like, he says, like, the value proposition is that I am local. I understand Sacramento trends, Sacramento culture, and I'm kind of an influencer within this sphere.
100% accurate.
Yeah.
That's how I view PHPR as well. I mean, look, we're not going to compete with an Ogilvy or an Edelman. We just don't, frankly, have the budget or the staff resources. So why bother? You know, but what you're going to get from me if you're a local restaurateur or a local nonprofit is going to be a much bigger bang for your buck because of my local connections.
Right.
So for me, it was just sort of about identifying my lane and really, really trying to excel in that lane. So I would absolutely recommend that to folks that are just getting started.
You You know, it's actually interesting. Like you talked about honing your craft, right? I'll make a quick analogy here because I'm, you know, my hobby, right? My passion for fun is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Ooh, don't make you mad.
just martial arts generally. You know, for me, it's you learn to defend yourself, and it's really healthy for that.
Yeah.
But it's also just kind of like adult playtime. You know, totally. You remember being like a kid in the sandbox and kind of play with other kids?
Yeah,
it's kind of just like playtime, you know? Yeah. It's like a dance, really. but every, you know, I'm exposed to a lot of like MMA fighters. And, you know, I train over at Uriah's gym. And Uriah actually said he's going to, you know, cross my fingers, come on, hopefully.
We'll get him on. Yeah. We'll get him on.
But you see a lot of fighters, you know, there's a lot of like Sacramento immigrants that just sold all their stuff to come fight under Uriah's banner. You know, a lot of folks are just like, you know what, I just sold my stuff and now I'm here and I'm gonna fight my way to the top. A lot of those guys don't make it, you know. There's a lot of really inspirational stories and there's a lot of folks who didn't make it, right? You know, as they say, life takes life,
right?
But the analogy is hone your craft.
Mm-hmm.
When you're always getting ready for your next fight, you got to cut your weight, you got to get to the city that you're fighting at, you've got to like get your corners, you've got a game plan for the stylistic nuances of the other opponent. So all that stuff takes time away from just getting better at martial arts.
Right.
So, you know, one piece of advice that I would have for a lot of folks is spend 3 years just learning martial arts. Spend 3 years honing your craft, because the process of getting ready for fight after fight after fight, become a really good fighter. But your actual skill set for martial arts might never develop as robustly as if you just spend some time in the dojo, right?
Right. Learning the craft. You know, there's so many facets to public relations. You know, there's crisis communications, there's earned media, there's social media, there's, you know, blogging, there's press writing, there's, you know, there's so many facets. And so, you know, a lot of times I think that there's this eagerness to just jump into it, right?
Right.
Start a blog and become an expert. But really becoming an expert is, like you say, learning the craft. And so for me, it was sort of finding out what kind of PR I really liked to do and what PR I didn't like to do and, you know, what clients I was willing to work with and vice versa, you know, because you never know until you do it.
In your, I imagine you have mapped out, and tell me if this is accurate or not, but I imagine a guy like you has in his mind's eye mapped out issue interest to a reporter.
Yes.
So when you've got like so you're kind of like the, I'm not going to say middleman, that's not flattering, but like kind of like a matchmaker, like, oh, I've got a newsmaker here doing this, and I've got a reporter with a demonstrated interest in this as well. You two should.
You nailed it. Is that right? I think I view it twofold. I view it as certainly a connector, right? But also a storyteller. And so it's basically just the story is my clients, and it's my job to help them tell it in the best, most impactful way possible. And part of that is connecting them with the right reporter. You know, I'd ping somebody like a Cambie Brown or a Bethany Crouch for something that's fun and upbeat and it's lively. When Chris Macias was at the B, it would be, you know, I'd love to have him come cover something that's art or entertainment or food based.
Right.
You know, so
a little
it's
bit
just,
more highbrow.
Yeah, a little bit more highbrow. You know, but it's just about kind of finding the right tone. Not every, you know, television segment is going to be perfect for KCRA. And some are only going to be perfect for KCRA.
Yeah.
Right.
Do the different, I never thought about that, but the like down to the station, they have different feels.
Absolutely.
I never thought about that.
You know, KCRA is much more journalistic in nature, much fewer live remote shots. You know, something with the Good Day Sacramento, for example, you're able to inject a lot more personality and sound effects and
visuals. Yeah, you're kind of
visuals.
On set.
Totally.
Almost like hanging out.
So just completely different feels. You know, if we're promoting a local candidate or a local measure, you know, we would certainly want to do more of an insight with Beth Ruyak sit down or more of a, you know, KCRA kind of Lisa Gonzalez interview. But, you know, if we're promoting a Zoso League event, you know, I want Cambie Brown out there throwing the beanbags with us in the cornhole league, right? You know, it's just, it lends itself to different things. And that's one of the reasons that Sacramento is so exciting is that, you know, not many people realize this, but we're a top 20 media market. We sit right in there at 20. And so we do have 4 true network stations, and we can really curate a lot of awesome content. So there's a lot of opportunity, I think, in Sacramento to profile businesses and events and issues in ways that, frankly, a lot of cities don't allow for.
I moved here because I wanted to work for the legislature, you know? And,
right.
You know, 7 years later, I got, you know, be careful what you wish for you shall receive it, right? And here I am. I grew up surfing.
Oh, wow.
You know. there's a period in high school where I was like, I was in the water twice a day. I was, you know, very serious about surfing. And so when I moved up here, I was kind of like, you know, the first year and a half, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do?
What am I going to do?
Yeah, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You know, that's actually when I got really into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Okay.
And there's also like no big attraction here. You know, like there's not like a Disneyland or there's not the beach here.
Right.
But, you know, if you
stay. It's like saltwater taffy in the old sack.
Yeah, yeah. But if you stay long enough, the city will grow on you in unexpected ways.
Yep.
And I'm at a point right now where I could not imagine, at least not in the near future, leaving, you know. What I really enjoyed about coming here is, you know, being someone who's interested in public policy and in politics. You know, if you're out at the bar in San Diego and you bring up like the regressive nature of like sales tax.
Right. Right.
Everyone's like,
what are you talking about?
What are you talking about? Yeah.
Did you see a downer?
Yeah. Quit being a downer. I don't want to talk about it. But like, you know, here you can like have a conversation at Simon's about,
I want to talk about it,
about wonky policy right. stuff. And so what I found in Sacramento was a community of people who give a damn.
Right.
You know,
that's a good way of putting it. You know, I hear that story a lot. I have a lot of friends that are transplants, that have fallen in love with the city, exactly like you say, and really can't imagine living anywhere else. And for me, being a lifelong resident here, I've had some stints in Southern California in the Bay Area, but I've been a lifelong resident of Sacramento. And
you grew up in Pocket?
I grew up in Pocket, right? Yeah, Greenhaven.
That's the most gorgeous neighborhood.
I love it. I love it. You know, and I went to Christian Brothers High School and Stingers Up, went to Sac State. So, I mean, I know from Sac, but I think about my quality of life here. You know, my office is at 28th and P, and I live in Boulevard Park, and, you know, I can walk my dog to work. I can ride a bike to any bar in Sac, you know, and we had mentioned earlier, just sort of the revitalization, I think, of the city. It's a really exciting time to be here.
Can you talk a little bit about like how you've been here? I'm not going to try and, you know,
you can age me.
Yeah. You know, because maybe mid 30s, right? But you've been here for a little while.
Yeah.
How have you seen it change and where do you see it going?
Well, I think the biggest change that I've noticed is that people that are from here have not only prioritized staying here, but
like pride.
Pride. They've got pride in the city, and they are now the face of it. They are now business owners. I mean, you've got people that are from here that are on arts commissions that are, you know, I look at a buddy of mine like Garrett Van Vleck, who I've known since I was in junior high, that he now with his business partners own four of the coolest bars in Sacramento. And I love those types of stories because it's, you know, these are people that get Sacramento, that what it was to be from here, but B, what this town needed. Right. What it was sort of missing.
Right. Right.
Because they had that context. But.
And also maybe folks who like younger in their childhood would have considered leaving for like a bigger city.
Totally.
Right. And now here they are sort
like, of like, why leave when we can make this cool?
Yeah.
And I think what's really interesting about Sacramento as compared to a lot of other cities is that you still can really affect change in Sacramento.
Yeah.
I mean, if you are, you know, if you are really engaged and really paying attention and really, you know, give enough of a damn, you can affect change. I mean, you can really join committees, join organizations, become a business owner. I mean, it's still doable here.
Right, right.
Which I really appreciate.
Yeah. I was thinking to myself, so when, you know, I recently got married, right?
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm lucky. I'm pinching myself. but we did a tour of the East Coast. We started in Portland, Maine, and we ended in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big tour.
Yeah. It was, I like to see America, you know?
Yeah.
We stopped in three state houses along the way.
Oh.
And so we stopped in Boston, Rhode Island, and New Hampshire. And I kind of peeked stopped in the hallways and peeked my head into some offices and just kind of asked if I could chat with staff. And what do you know? They were indulging me, right? And they're like, oh, you're from California. It's like if you are like a California legislative staffer and you go to like one of these other state houses, you have like a gold star by your name,
right?
Because we're actually running policy out of here in a way that you know what other states really are doing by and large is they're taking the policy that we've sort of developed and they're cut and pasting the language into their state laws, you know?
Right.
Over there, a really powerful state senator might get like two people.
Wow.
Right here, they get like 10 or 12.
Right.
You know, because we're at like a professional legislature, right?
Right.
So I think that's really cool, kind of even that it's like this ecosystem of kind of like socialites, people that give a damn, and then like the whole community. Like it still feels like a community here, right?
Yeah, you know, and it really truly is. I mean, I think about just being from here and really wanting to be philanthropic. Both my parents were, and they sort of instilled that in me, is that I've really prioritized board involvement. And so What I love to see about this town too is how caring it is. I mean, you know, we set records for like Big Day of Giving totals,
right? And right. All the time. Yeah.
And you know, you see a lot of nonprofit staff and executive directors really being held up as champions of the city, as they should be, I think, in ways that other cities don't necessarily prioritize as much. And so that too is kind of part of my thing. When you talk about politics, and particularly Sacramento being the hub of the, you know, the biggest, baddest, coolest state,
yeah.
You know, so you've got this sort of legislative influence, this philanthropic influence, and it's coupled with this time where like local business and city pride, I really don't think have ever been this high and this yeah. big.
That's good. Frankly, everything you just said is kind of what got me
doing the podcast.
Doing this podcast. Yeah. I kind of thought it was a good time for it, but kind of like what you said was like, you know, you feel like really confident in your ability in the actual work and then everything right. in between. Like I felt really confident in my ability to get people on, to have compelling conversations and to deliver a good product. But the other stuff I didn't know, you know, just for folks listening, I got 3 different cameras going. I just figured out this audio system, you know, I'm trying to build a website. Like it's a lot more kind of daunting than you would think, you know. You were talking about philanthropic work and mm-hmm. you do some pro bono work.
I do. Yeah.
Can you walk us through some of your pro bono clients and sort of what the.
Yeah, absolutely. I currently sit on a number of boards. I'm on the Weave board, which is Women Escaping a Violent Environment. I'm on the Sacramento Theater Company board. I'm on the LGBT Community Center board. So those are 3 boards that I personally serve on. And then PHPR takes on 2 nonprofit clients a year where we do pro bono work for them.
That is so cool.
I love it. And you know, a lot of times it's nonprofits that just don't have, frankly, the financial resources or the staff to be able to really implement effective communication plans.
Got it.
And what we're able to do is come in and really meet with their board, meet with their staff, and kind of devise a plan for them. That works backwards from a calendar year that says, you know, let's focus on your issues, let's focus on fundraising, let's focus on your marquee events throughout the year. But one of the organizations that we just partnered with for this year is, or for next year, 2018, is the Family Justice Center. You know, I'm really excited about the free legal services that they're providing folks in need. And what that entails,
especially
is,
now, right?
Like especially with, now.
Especially absolutely. Now with everything going on with immigration.
Totally. Yeah. And it's such a vital, important time. And, you know, well, it's they have access to the suite of services that we would provide any paying client. So we'll book them earned media coverage. We'll help solicit sponsorships for their marquee events. You know, we will get them on the radio. We'll give their social media a scrub and a zhuzh or whatever it needs.
Give it just a little bit of a better shine. Yeah.
And what's cool about that, too, is that not only do we get to help organizations that really need it, but I feel like, you know, I benefit as well because I'm learning so much about what these organizations do, you know, and that's why we try to prioritize 1 or 2 new organizations each year is because.
Oh, you're kind of hitting people in different areas of the ecosystem.
And, you know, there's so.
And it feels good, too, I'm sure.
It feels great. It feels great. And there's so many organizations that do need help that, you know, we don't want to just.
Right. Just run with 2 clients for the.
And then in my personal life, I prioritize board involvement with organizations that. You know, that I just am huge fans of and really believe in their mission statements. So, but again, I would recommend that anybody do that. I mean, I feel like everybody has the capacity to give back in some way, shape, or form. It doesn't necessarily have to be financial. You can always volunteer, donate time, whatever it is. But I think that for anybody looking to meet new people or to start their own business, you know, volunteer work and nonprofit work is a great way to get that ball rolling.
Yeah. You know, giving back or helping out in any way feels so good. And I didn't even realize I was doing this, but one of my best friends, he's like a brother to me at this point, you know? But he was, a recent immigrant from Iran.
Oh, wow.
And when we first met, he's, you know, good English, not great, still heavy accent. No one to show him the way.
Right.
No one to show him the way. Right. Like, how do you apply? Like,
how intimidating is that?
Yeah. And right? I'm not saying like, you know, I lightly mentored him when he asked for help. You know right. what I mean? He came to my office one day and he's like, "Dude, I want to apply for this job." And he's like, I was like, "Well, do you have a resume?" "Well, I did all these stuff." I was like, "All right, great. Let's type you up a resume right now.
Let's put it on paper.
And so, yeah. like, you know,
I love that.
For me, it was like half an hour because I'd done it before. For him, it was like, I don't even know where to start, dude. You know, not nearly as involved as all the great work that you do in the community, but just to say, like, man, it feels good. It feels good to be able to help out people close to you or your community at large, you know. Going back to the craft of public relations,
sure.
which I'm really interested in picking your brain about. And I know you got to get out of here pretty soon.
No.
You and I are kind of part of this micro generation where we had this like analog childhood mm-hmm. and like a digital adulthood, right?
So true.
Kind of like this like Twitter generation, right?
Yep.
How has the craft of PR changed with the hyper connectivity afforded by smartphones? And now everyone's like weighing in on issues. Just to add one more layer to this question, I feel like we all kind of used to get the news,
right.
But now we're getting the news on social media. And so you're relating, you know, maybe two or three different angles on one event, plus a layer of what your peers think about it.
Right.
And, and so you have to interpret so much more information. And it's also kind of like readily available there on the net.
Yes.
So how do you kind of like, how does that affect
such a good question.
What you do?
It's such a good question. And it's changed dramatically. And in fact, it's always changing, right? With the advent of new technology. But I think two of the ways in which it's changed, I think the most dramatically from when I started doing PR a decade ago, is one that everything happens in real time now. So there is this pressure to be first as opposed to being right and being correct. And okay. So you're seeing a lot of pressure on immediacy in ways that you never did before. And so how that affects somebody like me is, you know, if there's breaking news, they want to go live right then and there. So you oftentimes...
Do you ever have to tell your clients, like, maybe this isn't the time?
I do.
Just hold back.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we do a lot of preemptive work around that. So we might have crafted messages and messaging around issues that never came up. But just to be prepared if they do, because we know they're going to have to, you know, be ready to go.
Right.
The other thing that I would say, and it sort of speaks to your latter question, is that because everything is so digitized and online, what we're seeing right now is this self-selection. People are opting into content mm-hmm. they want, right? And eliminating content that they don't want. And how that manifests in the PR world is that, you know, if I am a liberal male that likes EDM and McDonald's,
aka all of my friends,
right? Well, right,
Ashwin, I'm looking at
but,
you,
but that means that my only news is coming from MSNBC. You know, I'm only paying attention to music that's on EDM related stations. The point that I'm saying is that we've all created these sort of self-selected
like in
bubbles,
these bunkers,
yes, and so it gets hard to permeate those bunkers if you've got a message or a client that doesn't necessarily fit into a bubble. And we're having to find creative, unique ways to go about doing that. But those are two things that have dramatically changed. I think the other thing that's changed is just how reporters that I pitch want to be pitched, right? You know, when I first started, it was sort of the standard press release, right? That you would email directly to a beat reporter and suggest the pitch. Well, now they don't have time for that. I mean, I can't tell you.
They don't have time for a tweet.
That's it. I mean, and so it's Twitter's been really great with print media because I think that it's still the best place to find journalists in terms of social media. And so I will just tweet at.
Is that how you pitch them now sometimes?
A lot of times. I mean, if I don't have the earned relationship already, you know, if it's a newly hired beat reporter out of the LA Times that I haven't met or worked with in the past, I'll just hit them up via Twitter. Which is completely,
you know, that's what I've been doing for a lot of my guests. And,
right. Yeah. I mean, which is completely different than, for example, television. If I'm going to coordinate or produce a segment for television, it's all visual, right? So they want B-roll and stagnant images and multiple spokespeople. And if it's a live shot, a very visual background that helps tell that story. And radio too is different. You know, radio wants as much information as possible up front. So it's, you know, the way that you pitch outlets, I think, is changing also.
No.
And that's a direct correlation to kind of the influence of social media and its, I guess, ever-changing landscape.
Yeah. One of the reasons I wanted to have you on is because I Googled you and I saw you came up on a, People of Sacramento comment on the news.
Oh, right.
That was a great segment. I think it Comsox does it.
Yeah. It was Nate. I believe it was Nathan Miller that did that.
Oh,
and
my
it was
God,
a
what
series
a great,
that he did.
Yeah.
Cause he was a journalist and was given a specific beat to cover. And what he wanted to do was really kind of interview people, that he liked and that he knew of in Sacramento. And he gave us all the same questionnaire, which was really interesting because we all had completely different answers based on our professional or personal backgrounds. Yeah.
So what, that was a couple of years ago. What would you say the biggest issues facing us now are? If you can just quickly rattle off some of the things that you see that you're either concerned about or excited about for Sacramento this season.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm concerned about, I'll start there because we'll end with a positive, right?
Yeah, I like that.
It's still one of the things that I was concerned about 2 years ago. And in fact, I think the problem has gotten worse. I'm really concerned about the homelessness issue that's affecting Sacramento. And I think when we talk about homelessness, it's not just a simple issue. One of our clients is the Mental Health Advocates of California Association. And you see mental health affecting so many different groups within our community in very different ways. Veteran populations, lower socioeconomic populations, transient populations. But the homelessness issue, I know Daryl Steinberg has really made a big priority of his first year in office. And I'm hoping that he'll continue to prioritize that moving forward, because I think it's something that we really have to address. I think, too, that the influx of new residential infrastructure that we're particularly seeing right now in downtown and midtown, well, there's parts of that I love because it helps modernize the city and beautify the city.
Right. What are you going to do to housing?
Right. There's parts of it that really cause concern. You know, you're price pointing out a lot of people that just frankly can't afford to live in those condos and those skyscrapers. So what do we do with that? I mean, I hope that our focus isn't so narrow-minded that we're therefore even adding to this homelessness issue. That is still a big issue of mine. Some things that I love that I'm really excited about.
Yeah.
Art.
Yeah.
Art in our city is, I think, having a moment. I think we are a city that is so fortunate to have a crazy amount of talented artists that not only are recognized, you know, here locally because they're beloved, but are getting some really national and international acclaim. I look at people like Brian Valenzuela or Maren Conrad or, you know, Micah Crandall Bear. These are folks that are traveling the country with their art pieces, that are having some of their pieces exhibited, you know, out of the state, out of the country again. And that's something that's really exciting to me. And then obviously our farm to fork culture. I mean, we have... The food scene here is insane.
Dude, when I was in Maine and they're trying to tell me about how progressive the food scene there was, I was like,
beat it.
Just beat it.
I mean, I think about how spoiled I am just living in Midtown.
Yeah.
And being able to walk.
Yeah.
To 4-star Thai, Chinese, Mexican,
yeah.
Sushi. I mean, not to mention, you know, our standards, places like Mulvaney's and you know, restaurants that have been here forever, yeah. They're still just as good and just as innovative.
Or even just the duck at Simon's.
Yeah. Simon's so is my favorite.
So let's end it on this because I know you got to get out of here. Yeah. We are the farm to fork capital
of right.
the world, and our cocktail scene can't be beat either.
Oh, my God. Well, don't I know. Yeah. Tell that to my liver.
Yeah, right.
I think I'm in my mid-30s, we'll just say that, but my liver, I think,
your liver's on doggy
76.
Years.
Exactly.
What was the last great thing you ate or drank in town?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I am... really passionate
yeah.
about the steak that I just had last week at Press Bistro.
That place is awesome.
It's so good. And it's a flank steak. I mean, it's not, you know,
it's nothing fancy,
but the way that they prepare it and they medallioned it and they had this reduction demi-glaze on top of it and they had this cheesy scallop potato thing. I swear to you that I have told at least 35 people about this steak. I'm so passionate about it.
That is so cool.
And I just checked out Canon for the first time, which is Clay Nutting's new endeavor. It's in East Sacramento off 33rd Street. Totally recommend it. Great food. But they did a drink called the Brown Derby, which to the best of my knowledge, obviously it had whiskey in it because I'm a big whiskey guy. But it also had brown sugar, simple syrup, grapefruit juice, and a couple other things. But it was really unique and unlike anything that I'd had before in Sacramento. And also, it was sort of sweet enough and light enough and tart enough that it could, you know, be fine in the summer or the spring. But because it was whiskey-based and heavy, oh, it was so nice. And now it's getting cold again, you know?
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go a little bit not quite as foodie as Bistro.
Does that make me seem sort of snobby?
No, that's, I think
I hang
awesome.
Out at Elixir and Simon's, and you know I got to give love to my ESAC bars.
Yeah, yeah, no, Jargons, yeah. You, it was the last thing you had that you're excited about.
Yeah,
I think that's
exactly.
cool. The Rick's Hacienda on Fruit Ridge.
Oh, you know, I've never been there.
Dude, you got to go.
It's like a travesty because I'm a Christian Brothers graduate.
Yeah.
And it's so right close.
There. Yeah. Dude, I mean, I just had some enchiladas with like rice and beans. It was like home style. And then they brought me a margarita and a goblet that was only a little bit smaller than my head.
So you ordered three.
Yeah. So I had three, you know, and then they do karaoke on the weekends.
Okay. I'm going.
Yeah.
Well, you had me at karaoke because I have to tell you that I am known for karaoke at Pine Cove. I go to Pine Cove. That's where I do my karaoke.
They're serious about their karaoke. Though.
They're very serious. And I mean, some of these contestants, I swear to God,
well, they do it like with the winners live of the voice. They do it like with the live band behind you.
Yeah, it's crazy.
For folks listening, you guys got to check this out. They do it. I think on Tuesdays.
Yeah, Tuesday night
with the live band behind you. It's like they're like singing. You're at a concert almost. It's so cool.
And I'm sort of manic with karaoke because I'm a firm believer that you have got to be a person that knows your karaoke, just like know your lane.
Yeah,
know your songs, right?
Yeah.
And I, depending on the mood of the bar, will either do, this is so random, System of a Down's Toxicity.
Ooh, like an elixir.
Oh, I just love it. You know, you can really, it's cathartic to sing almost. Or Madonna's Crazy for You. So I'm all over the place.
You got the spectrum of emotions.
Yeah, what's yours?
Ooh, so I'm actually better in Spanish.
Oh, I love
so
that.
I don't know why. But I'm just able to stay on key a little bit better in Spanish. And so I like the song called Pachuco.
Okay.
And it kind of means like, it's kind of like a kid, right? Like a kid from Mexico. Okay. Like, so a ska went super viral in Mexico, by the way.
Really?
Super viral.
I didn't know that.
Mexico loves ska.
That's awesome. I love ska.
Yeah. So it's this like ska type of beat.
Okay.
And it's basically like saying from the point of view of like an old man complaining about the shit that the kids are wearing nowadays.
You should have that be the outro for this week's podcast.
Yeah, you know, that might not be a bad idea.
We could duet. We could do Despacito.
We could.
I could do the Bieber parts.
Next time we're at the distillery.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, the distillery is another favorite place. I mean, gosh, aren't we so spoiled in that too? Our bar culture is insane.
I like that we have places that are Sacramento staples that don't take themselves so serious. Like the distillery would lose its specialness to me.
It's charm, me too.
If it like redid the interior or whatever, right?
Well, that's exactly how I feel, again, about a Tumi or a Chargans. It's like, you know, I love to go there and have a 7 and 7.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, going to do a martini, per se, at Tumi. But damn it, that's not why I go there. I want to play some shuffleboard and have a 7 and 7.
And see your neighbors.
And see your neighbors.
Very cool.
Right?
Very
maybe
cool.
Have some beef jerky and a bag of Doritos.
Let's end it at that. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This is a real pleasure.
Yeah.